Remember when you were starting your career or starting something fresh? Or maybe you're starting now and it was exciting and new and you were learning and growing. You also thought that the company and your manager would help you guide your career path. Well, how's that going? My name is Todd Doherty and I host a podcast called Manage Me. I have 30 years of client, product, and operations experience from startups to retail to Fortune 100 companies. Listen in as I share real-world stories of business and life with solutions you can use. I'll have occasional fantastic guests that will share their insights as well. Come join me and learn real-world guides on how to be the most successful you and manage you. That's Manage Me Podcast and managemepodcast@gmail.com.
Okay, team, welcome back to the Manage Me Podcast, season three, as we continue to talk with coaches, leaders, consultants, people in the industry that are shaping people's thoughts and leaders who are affecting how people drive their careers, make change within organizations. Super excited to have Evan Smith on the podcast today. We were introduced by some other leaders and coaches that I've been talking to. And Evan and I have just realized that we have almost bumped into each other several times, but haven't quite figured it out, whether it's Connecticut, Rhode Island, or here in Atlanta, Georgia area. Or I guess we didn't work at GE at the same time, but we were sort of just on the periphery of working together. Evan is the founder of Metamorphosis Management Group. He is, that group is shifting leader behavior for real change. And I love that. By the way, quite a pedigree of Penn State, Yale, quite a background. So I'm super excited, Evan, to have you on the podcast. I'm sure I did a super high level touch of the top of the waves of introduction to you, but welcome. Yeah. And I'd love to hear, kind of tell us about yourself.
Thanks, Todd. And it's really a pleasure to join you. I look forward to exploring all the, you know, how we were separated at birth, as you began to describe there, all the connection points that we share in common. I'm at the place here where I work independently through Metamorphosis Management Group and a collection of partners. I started my career working as an engineer for GE in a business with challenges. There's a longer story, the story about Jack Welch and the way that he drove business improvement at GE is a long one in its own right, but I was there during that period and had the chance to see both quite a bit that worked well, but also quite a bit that didn't, especially quite a bit that didn't in the business that I was part of. And for me at the time, that drove a reckoning of sorts. I mean, very early in my career, maybe you remember this for yourself, that moment where you just sort of step out into the work world, you're full of aspirations and hopes, you've got this vision about what could be. And I had all that certainly, and joined this company, a pedigree company. And literally I had this moment about 3 weeks into the job where I said, I have made a horrible mistake. This is terrible. And it was terrible in a whole range of ways, but it was, fortunately, I had moments where I actually sort of updated my resume, but fortunately did not sort of exit the system immediately. What I got intrigued about is what wasn't working in this business. And what my high level observations about that are that we were really poor at collaborating together, especially across group, team, organizational lines, including with customers. And I got intrigued with what was it about our collaboration that wasn't working. That sort of sent me on a career shift. I'll fast forward to now. I've had the privilege of working in change and transformation with some just absolute brilliant thought leaders and coaches and consultants in their own right, Dr. John Cotter, Michael Bungay Stanier, and others. And and also a lot of colleagues who have been along with me here for the last 20 years. And what I'm seeing more and more, especially in a time right now that's so volatile, is that the focus of change has to include, for individual leaders, it has to include your own learning process. How fast can I adapt what I'm doing to be responsive to the challenges I'm seeing, the people around me, the team that I am nominally here to, you know, here to support? What is it that I need to do more quickly? And how do I get past whatever my own constraints, limitations, assumptions, biases might be? So that's really where the focus of my work is these days, which is both sort of coaching and consulting around business challenges and leaders as they address those business challenges.
Oh, that's so important. You know, it's interesting. Different time period. I'm pretty darn sure we didn't overlap at GE, but I had quite a similar experience. Was super excited to join GE. I was so proud to, you know, Fortune 1 company at the time, right? Yeah. Super proud, and immediately had, more than imposter syndrome. It was GE Capital that I had joined, and just type A, super smart people across the board. And I just felt like, am I supposed to be here? Like these people are unbelievable. And yeah. I had a little bit of Jack Welch and a little bit of Jeff Immelt. So I had kind of saw that transition. And yeah. my joke is, pre-Immelt, you needed like an FMEA analysis to order a pencil. Like if you ran out of pencil, you need to sort of, the quality right. and rigor was so over the top. You know, everything was, well, let's have a workout on how to order new pencils,
Right.
I'm obviously exaggerating, but it kind of felt like that sometimes.
Yeah.
And then Immelt came in and just said, hey, woo, let's kind of do quality light. It's important, but we're kind of over processing and all that. But very soon, a couple of times I thought, am I in the right place here? And then, very similarly, I love what you're doing, because, it's overutilized, that term, change is the new constant, right?
Yeah.
And I remember my epiphany. I was actually at Citizens Bank. I think I can name names here in this podcast. So I won't say anything derogatory. It was one of the best learning experiences. A couple roles in my career that I just learned a tremendous amount. GE was absolutely one of them. A lot of learning that just I still use today. But I remember a moment talking about change, and it seems so silly when I talk about it now, but we were moving my team from one floor to another floor. That's it. We're just moving. And in my mind, I'm like, this is a piece of cake. This is, pretty easy. And it's an opportunity for me to reorganize how my teams are physically structured, right? I can group mm-hmm. the right teams together, because, the next person to come in, you just sat them at the next open desk. Like you didn't really figure out like, well, maybe the project management team should be together, and then the operations team that supports them should be. Anyway, yeah. I looked at it as this positive experience. And what I realized as I was nonchalantly talking about the move and we're going to do this and that not everyone was accepting or open to the change as much as I was. And right. I couldn't get my arms. Why are people so resistant? This is happening. Why? I don't understand. They're angry at me for moving. And I'm like, this has nothing to do with me. This is facilities. And anyway, and it hit me so hard right then and there that, wait, this is a Todd problem. I'm the one that is right. open to change, and I'm not accepting that everyone has their own feelings about change and where they're going to sit, and it's different. And so anyway, that was my epiphany that I've carried forward of, okay, when we approach change, I have to understand that my view of change and someone else's view of change might be dramatically different.
Yes. Yes. I love that story. It's I chuckle because I've heard versions of that from folks who have the sort of capacity for self-reflection that it sounds like you do. I'm also chuckling because I just wrote a few blog posts about this on a part of what you're describing, and tell me if this resonates for you or if it's different. There's a little bit of a last mile effect around change. And the story that I that sort of grabbed me about this was the New York Marathon, right? Here's tens of thousands of people running this marathon. The best runners go out first. By the time they're halfway through the race, half of the runners have not started the race. So the best runners are already at peak aerobic performance. They are stretching and, you know, competing, and they're deep viscerally into what's going on. There's tens of thousands of other people who aren't breathing hard, who may not even be at the starting line yet. They're still hundreds of yards back from it, right? Their experience is not the same as the experience of those elite runners who are way out in front. In fact, when those elite runners are finishing, there's still people who aren't yet into the race. Right. And I think there's a certain aspect of that around change. There's no substitute for engaging people in the learning about what the change is, what it means for us, what it might mean for me individually or me personally, and doing that out loud in conversation together. There's no substitute for that, certainly, in my experience. But I love your story. A great learning moment.
Well, and the last mile, right? I love that. I did read those part one and part two. It's out there on Evan's LinkedIn, and I think on your Metamorphosis Management website. Great articles. And I never thought about that way, right? And I was an elite runner. You know, I'm so excited I crossed the finish line. I'm, you know, yay, I'm done. The race is done. But you're not thinking about the people who are still lacing up their shoes. They haven't even started.
That's right.
Really kind of being aware. When I first started to read your blog post about Last Mile, it's funny because now we're coming full circle to GE. I thought immediately about the DMAIC process, the GE, Six Sigma Quality, define, measure, analyze, implement, control. And I always, when I was talking with people about that process and about just change and about implementing change, I said, actually, the first couple parts are, I don't want to say easy, but they're way easier than the last part, which is control, right? Yes. Which is we've implemented change, some sort of change, quality change, you know, physical move change, whatever that is. The control part is sort of the ongoing, let's make sure we don't slip back to the old way. And that is actually, for me, my experience, the hardest part because of, I'll call it human nature, is we'll go through all define, measure, analyze, implement, we'll do all that stuff. But if we don't put in if we don't understand the change and the effect, and we don't put in the, I'll call it openness, transparency, the discussion, as you mentioned, kind of getting it out in the open about the effects of the change. If we don't truly recognize that, it's so easy to slip back to the quote unquote old way of doing things.
Yeah. I think we need to think about that C in control as not something that is a sort of a threshold moment, steady state now and forevermore into the future, but it's a quality or a condition with a half-life. Yes. And my guess is we're always way optimistic about what we think that half-life is, because you know what happens next week. Next week, Jenny, who is the person on that team who's really sort of got everything locked down and knows all the tab A's and where they fit into slot B's, you know, Jenny has a something that causes her to reduce her hours, or she's gotten recruited by another, and so she leaves. And all of a sudden, we discover how much we, you know, don't quite have in control anymore, because we're missing some of that implicit knowledge and understanding about how it really works and what it takes to respond to all the things that are happening in a VUCA world, right? Not to a term that has gotten perhaps overused, but in a volatile setting where control, I think, control is at best a condition with a half-life. At worst, it's an illusion.
That's right. That's true. I like that, thinking about it as a half-life, right? Because if you don't think about it that way, typically, it's okay, project's done, on to the next one, right? Zero half-life. Right. We're just on to the next one. But yeah, I like that half-life. One of the I'm going to say terms, descriptions of that you use for the Metamorphosis group, management group, excuse me, is lead more effectively by deepening connections.
Yes.
Tell me more about that. I think we've touched on it a little bit here, but tell me more about what does that mean? And then how, without going too deep, how do you do that? How do you talk to people and coach people, help them understand how to deepen connections and what that impact is?
Yeah. This is a big topic, and I have I have enthusiastic points of view on many parts of it, but let me try to be concise here. A lot of us, and again, I think I was in an earlier generation at GE than you, but I'm guessing for many people listening in, a lot of us were conditioned to understand what leading means, whether we're team leading or, you know, leading a function, leading a business, running a business as a GM. We were conditioned that that means behaving in a certain way. And if for any of your listeners who've been at this for a while, you figured out what it takes to be successful. And a lot of that is based on your understanding of context and subject matter expertise, knowledge that you possess that lets you respond quickly and guide, direct, et cetera. And there's really a place for that. In a world though, where things are changing dynamically, where let's say, you know, steady state has a shorter and shorter half-life, that subject matter expertise also has a half-life. It becomes less and less valuable.
Right.
But because we have learned how to perform in our role, our tendencies, our patterns, and I know you've had some other guests on talking about neuro-linguistic patterns, which I'm looking forward to hearing more about, but our patterns are to keep sort of exercising the same muscle, you know, the same capability that has made us successful till now.
Right.
And for a lot of us, again, if you know, over the last few decades, it is about this guiding, directing, you know, giving advice. Michael Bungay Stanier calls it, the advice monster. We're doing things reflexively, and we're trying to do it quickly to be productive because the day is short and my task list is long. When I talk about connection, part of what is important about that is creating a real conversation so that for me as someone, you know, with nominal leadership responsibility, I can actually hear from the people around me what is going on now in the setting or in the environment or with them that's different, you know, altered from what I might understand. And then to, in that way, deepen relationship, build connection, share more information, create new ideas that are gonna let us respond effectively together to what's happened in the environment, rather than me trying to sort of, you know, my ivory tower or my desk in the corner or whatever it is, trying to guide things with knowledge that is stale and out of date, or understanding that's stale and out of date. So deepening connection is really about getting to the place where they're based on a deeper understanding, we collectively can work better together to respond to what's shifting in the, you know, in the environment around us.
Oh, wow. There's so much there. Let me
yes,
try to, and it's all good. I didn't mean that in any sort of negative way. There's so much there. Let me try to touch on a couple points. One is the first part that I heard from you, basically what's worked for me in the past, I'm going to continue to do because it's worked for me, right? This sort of unconscious bias that, well, it's always worked, so I'm just going to continue doing it. But yeah. The environment's changed, or the role has changed, or the team has changed, or the mission has changed, whatever, all sorts of things have changed. But if you continue to use what you've always done, it may not be the most effective thing you can do. Right.
Right. Right.
Interesting. I was listening, Evan, I really was, I tried very hard to listen and not start thinking about all the next questions I have, but it's hard because I have a million questions, but as you were talking about that, I've just recently reread Brené Brown's Dare to Lead book again.
Yeah.
Yep. It's actually something that my current organization is diving deeply into. Mm. And so I said, well, I know we're going to do this. Let me go reread the book again. And it was great. But one thing, there's so many lessons in there, but one thing that's really, actually have it, I wish I had a removable camera I could show you. I have a sticky note on my monitor right now Brené actually has it tattooed somewhere on her arm or something, and it's an S parenthesis space parenthesis R, and what it means is situation. So something happens, pause, reflect, etc. Then the R, respond, and I'm trying. Just like I'm trying to do all sorts of other things and change and be aware of, I'm trying to be aware of when I'm doing the more reactive, right? I've heard this, let's just go do this. I've done this before. You know, in my mind, those milliseconds decisions are just happening. I'm trying to be better at, okay, what's the situation that's happening right now? What should I be thinking about? What should I be planning? What are my options, et cetera? And let me respond. Also, you have to do that in today's society. Things are so real time. You can't you can't take too long to pause and reflect, because then people are like, "Hello, are you still here?"
right.
But I'm trying to relearn. I'm trying to make myself more conscious of that. And I think I heard that in there.
Absolutely right. Yes, I mean, I think so. I can tell you there's a story. From a recent client who was describing his impulses, which sound similar. And again, many of us, especially conditioned by the pace of things today, our digital devices, the notifications, the Slack messages, whatever it is, we feel overwhelmed, and we are doing our best to sort of keep up with the pace of the treadmill of responses. But I from a recent client, he said to me, I'm realizing now that my pattern has actually called for adrenaline. I get the notification, I get the signal for a problem. I recognize that I know something about the problem. I get the jolt of adrenaline that tells me that this is worthy. And I dive in without the pause that you're describing. Right. And unfortunately, and you all may have your own experience of this. When we're doing that, we are making whatever the problem is about our agenda. I'm feeding my adrenaline. I am giving in to my instinct to be seen as valuable. I want to be helpful, et cetera. We've lost the connection with whoever the other people are who are involved, who have their own experience of the problem. And all I've done is separate myself from them. We are not in the same relationship anymore, or we're not deepening the relationship at that point. When I do that, when I make it about me, rather than allowing that pause and doing some inquiry, at least, those are the sorts of movements that deepen connection and begin to invite new ideas, collaboration, et cetera, that's going to get us to another level.
Yeah. I just had a recent podcast guest, Shelton Davis, and he has a company called Empathy Labs, and very similarly, his focus in working with individuals and organizations and teams within those organizations is the empathy side of it, right? It's the recognizing that it's just exactly what you just said, right? It's not always about me. It's about them too, and us, and the team, and the company, and just having just being aware and acting in a more empathetic way of how you jump on those solutions, rather than the adrenaline, dopamine, whatever that that hit is of I'm going to respond to this email or jump on this or answer this question or solve this problem. So important.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And being in the place where effectively, and in this is for me, has really become a cultivated, hard won, cultivated skill. Still not, this is a practice every day, but being in the place where I can both be in my job, performing, responding, engaging, and where I can be sort of one level above or outside watching Evan behave, perform, engage, so that I can get a point of view on whether I'm being true to this, what my better instincts might be or my better desires might be. The challenge, again, there's a lot here, but the challenge for many of us is we don't have a complete or well-developed understanding about how other people see or experience us unless we stop to engage with them along the way. Dan Goleman wrote about this originally 20 years ago, or beginning 20 years ago or more, in emotional intelligence. Most recently, there's a book by an author named Tasha Urich, who observes from her social science research that there's a certain amount of Dunning-Kruger effect going on. We overestimate how self-aware we believe we are. And when you talk to the people around us, again, by a dramatic gulf, and by dramatic, I mean like 80%, most of us are far less self-aware, apparently, than the people around us believe we are. So part of the slowing down part is, in that moment, the response part is, what do I do next? How do I, rather than then going to whatever my advice might be, how do I do some inquiry in a way that, again, sort of deepens connections, moves me into a better relationship or a more insightful place with my team, and lets us collectively sort of optimize for the solution in this new setting that we found ourselves.
I want to make sure I heard that correctly. The research shows that, let me try to paraphrase what I heard. The research shows that I may think I'm not being, I'm going to call it empathetic. I'm not being open. I'm not thinking about the other person, but the research is saying that it's actually the opposite, that people who were actually engaging with feel that we are more open and thinking about those other people.
No, it's exactly the other way.
Okay. I just wanted to be sure.
Most of us think we're quite self-aware,
but we're not.
And if you ask the people around us, we're actually not.
That's what I expected to hear. And I just wanted to be sure.
Yes.
I think I'm a 10 out of 10, and people are saying, no, you're really a 4.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. I mean, Tasha, she had, I think her original set of studies were 5,000 participants. 90% of those 5,000 said, yes, I'm very self-aware in my, in how I show up. And when she did the 360 with all the people around those 5,000 people, it turns out that 10% of those people were actually self-aware. So the gap, when I talk about the size of the gap, it's a big gap.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Not that we need a real world example, but literally yesterday I was driving home into my neighborhood, and we have a two-lane yellow line road, a major road, but not a highway, major road. And then we turn off into our neighborhood. And so I'm driving down this two lane double yellow line road. It's the speed limit's like 50, like it's 45, mm-hmm. 50. It's a pretty major road. And the car in front of me just is doing like 40, mm-hmm. I mean, okay, it's their right. I'm not beeping. I'm not angry. I'm just kind of like, okay, this is unusual. People are actually usually doing 60, but anyway. and all of a sudden the car just stops. Like there's no, I'm looking to see if there's an animal, maybe a deer or a turkey or something crossing the road, and it just stopped. And I stop, obviously, and I wait, which seemed like 10 minutes, but it was probably 5 seconds. And I didn't beep or anything yet. I'm here in Atlanta, and the difference between New England and Atlanta is a horn in Atlanta is like, you're about to fight, like it's way different than right. a horn in, say, Rhode Island or Boston or Connecticut, right. Way different. So you really reserve that horn to, until you're really, really, really super frustrated. Anyway, just a slight pause there for anyone listening and ever driving in Atlanta. And so I realized that I think this person is lost and they don't know where to go. Hmm. But zero self-awareness. Like you can't just stop in the middle of a road
right.
to figure out where you are. You have to, pull over or pull off into a neighborhood or whatever. And, within maybe 10 or 15 seconds, they started up again. And I just thought, wow, this world is just incredible. I can't imagine that I would be so, have such lack of self-awareness that I would just stop in the middle of a road to figure out where I was.
Right, right. Yeah.
Amazing.
It is pretty remarkable. And it's interesting just to, you know, play this back. You immediately in that moment begin to try to hypothesize about what's going on for that person, right? They're lost. But clearly don't recognize that they're in traffic or have, you know, there's people on this road with them.
Right.
There's a construct called the ladder of inference, which is really can be really useful in once you're in conversation or, you know, engaged with someone, that can be really useful for unpacking how you see what's going on with your own thinking for purposes of getting to more insight. You know, there's an array of possibilities around what was going on for that person. She spilled her coffee, or he had a check engine light come on, or you know, you're right, or a critical phone call. You know, any number of things could have. And what we do with the information we're cherry picking from the environment, or you know, presented with, and the sense we make of it, watching our own thought process is fascinating and insightful, and can help lead to just creating more possibilities that can lead to more fruitful outcomes, I guess.
Yeah, and I'm learning from my daughters who are
there you go.
Very much you know, if they were in the car, they would have probably said something like, well, you know, I wonder if they're having a medical issue, or and my immediate reaction was, what's this person doing? You know, you know, shame on me. So you take these lessons and you work with individual leaders, teams. Mm-hmm. Tell us you probably work in millions of different ways, but what's the ideal situation of how you work with leaders to help them, you know, with their behavior to enact real change, as you mentioned?
Right. Yeah, thank you. And as I mentioned, the last 20 years for me have been about substantially working in change and transformation with organizations that want, you know, recognize that there's a disruption coming, or they're experiencing a disruption. They need to get to a different place in terms of outcomes and performance at an organizational level. And increasingly, you know, these days, it is about helping those individual leaders in the context of those demands understand what they need to do to learn more quickly or more effectively, so that they can be in service of both their own desired outcomes and desired future, as well as that of their organization. And what that means is a lot of the work today is in the context of working with organizations does involve executive coaching and team coaching, because there's no substitute for helping people work with stuff that's live and real, separate from a training, you know, sort of a training setting.
Yeah.
But the other part of the work today, you know, that is cobbled up to connected to the change workshops and executive coaching is I do some work with some digital solutions that actually help people make their learning process more explicit. A nudge-based approach that we build into what we do, so that, for example, if in an executive coaching context, a leader might get to the place where they recognize, hey, there's a core behavior for me that I, you know, ideally I'll make a shift in, you know, to go back to an example we were touching on earlier, it might be about the way that I respond to sort of trigger events or stimuli or a problem that my team raises for me. I want to make a shift in my behavior. We'll work with that leader or team of leaders to identify what those key behavioral shifts are, frame them as a new habit, and we'll get them to sort of log those in a system, and then respond on a regular basis in the course of a work week to how it's going. Like, how are you rating yourself in terms of follow through around this new desire behavior? And what are you observing as you try it, whether it's working today or whether it's not working, capture a learning observation. We use those both for feedback to support the coaching, but we also use it in sort of looking organizationally to see what sorts of challenges, behavioral challenges, are people working on, who's active and engaged in this process and who's not. And ultimately, it's really about for each individual, not necessarily about whether they're using the system, but what are you learning about your learning, and how do you get more intentional about learning in service of the changes that you want to create for yourself. So that's really the area of focus that I'm most engaged in right now, is helping people learn about their learning using real life sort of change demands to help them do that.
Right. Oh, that's really, I'm such a data nerd. I love that. I've got a friend of mine, Chris Plemons, who he wanted to focus on some personal things, you know, making sure he's, you know, spending more time with his wife and spending more time with his kids, and, you know, a couple of the personal things. And he actually created a tracking chart, right? Of, okay, these are the, and I don't know, I'm just going to make it, I think these are the six things that I want to make sure that I do every day. And then he Excel wizard, right? He created this whole Excel document that tracked, you know, by day. And then he had, you know, summations of how did I do this week? How did I do this month? How am I doing month over month, and all that stuff. And just the mere fact of him, you know, every day at the end of the day, he would record, you know, just, and I can't remember, it was like a plus, minus, or a zero or something like that. Plus was good, minus was bad, zero was I didn't do it at all, period.
Right.
And I believe that's the metric. I guess it doesn't really matter, but the two things happened. One was the conscious effort to identify and list the actual behaviors he wanted to address, step one. Two was put a system together to remind himself that I need to be doing these things, and then measure his success, and then be able to come back and say, you know, I actually had a chart, like, am I improving, or am I wavering, or am I declining? And then after a certain amount of time, I'm not sure how long it was, but after a certain amount of time, he's like, okay, I don't need the dashboard anymore. I know what I need to do. I know where I'm weak, and I know what I need to, I've got now individual habits that I've formed for each of these, I think, six categories. I probably way oversimplified that, but
yeah,
that kind of the idea, the approach that you're talking about.
I would say yes. And what we're doing is, I mean, I love the discipline that you've described here around the system that Chris has created.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like a very comprehensive system, from behavior design right the way through to tracking and then synthesizing for learning purposes after being able to see patterns. That is effectively what we're trying to do, but not just for an individual, but for a set of individuals, for teams, for functions in organizations, and then sort of using not just the individual level themes to help individuals make discrete shifts in how they're working, but also to sort of understand what the higher level organizational themes or group themes might be, and what that might suggest for where the work needs to go next, for example.
Got it. Excellent. So how best, I'm hoping we've got folks listening right now that say, my company's going through a change, or my organization's going through a change. How do I work with Evan? What's the best way to connect with you and learn more about what you do and how you might help them?
Yeah, thank you. I mean, the best ways to connect would be, let's get connected on LinkedIn. I'm C.E. Smith. I got lucky and got a LinkedIn identifier that's not too complicated. C.E. Smith on LinkedIn. And certainly through the website, my website, metamg.com. Those would be the two best ways. Drop me an email, evan@metamg.com as well.
Awesome. I'll put that all in the episode notes, so there's links and everything.
Great.
So people just go to the podcast notes. You'll see it in there. You'll see all those links. We'll make sure you get it. One last question. Well, I think maybe I might have more, but one last question I definitely want to ask you. Something new I've totally ripped off from another podcast that I heard. Manage Me Coaching is my coaching practice. And when you hear manage me coaching, what are your thoughts? What does that mean to you? And what do you think manage me is about?
Yeah. So I think if I had to sort of distill this to the, at its essence, to me, what that says is, if I'm going to have an impact in the world with my team, my group, or outside of work with my family, the work has to start with me. And I think ultimately it has to get to not just sort of me doing myself day to day, but me sort of observing and learning as I go through the day, so that I can make shifts that are in service of the outcomes I want. That's what I hear in Manage Me, and it's why I was so excited to join you today, because I think we share, again, a lot of interest in this broad topic area. I think you're onto something big and important, and I love how you're able to sort of aggregate a lot of people with useful points of view around the topic.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you, Evan. I'm so glad I recorded that. I can't wait to go listen to that a few more times, because that is... I'm trying to distill down the thoughts around it, but you're absolutely right. I had another previous podcast guest say, you know, it's the oxygen mask, right? You gotta put your own on first, right?
That.
So you can help other people. And I was like, yeah, that's another good one. So I'm going to steal, all of these, to hopefully help describe what I'm trying to do here. So absolutely. Any last things or areas we want to touch on again to make sure we've covered everything? I know we could probably talk for another 2 hours at least, but anything yes. else we maybe didn't touch on that you want to cover?
Yeah, I guess one last encouragement, I suppose. And again, a good friend of mine likes to close his meetings, his messages, workshops this way. And I think it's really valuable. If you want to take something away from the conversation that you and I have just enjoyed, Todd, my encouragement to your listeners would be, what's the one behavior for you, the one place in your work, in your life, with your team, with an important person, what's the one shift in your behavior that you want to make? And what are you going to do right now, starting today, starting right now? What is that? And my encouragement is, write it down and tell someone about it so that you start to make it real. And yes. And then you go out and do it. And I'm sure you'd love to hear, I certainly would love to hear, what people choose to do, what action do you choose to take, and how does it go over time?
Absolutely. I love that. Yes. What did we just learn? Because there was so many bits of information and helpful topics. Again, in a short amount of time, we could talk for hours more. But what was the one thing that maybe resonated with you that you're going to take forward? And I absolutely love that. And also love that, because I was going to ask you this anyway, I'd love to kind of keep the door open and follow up at some point. Maybe we have you come back on again, and we talk about what's different since the last time we've met, and what are some of the changes and things that you've done since. So I would love to keep that option open.
Perfect. I'd love that too. Yes. I feel like we're just sort of scratching the surface here, getting started together. So we got a lot of catching up to do here, given that we were separated at birth.
I know we got to absolutely. I have to go back up to Providence and get some really good Italian food, which I miss tremendously. Last thing, I've talked about sort of the culture change. Most of my life was spent in Connecticut. The other kind of maybe a third was spent in the South here. Maybe not even a third, maybe a quarter. The big difference is when you have events in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts. Typically, you know, just general catering is Italian food, you know, pasta, et cetera, et cetera. Down South, you know, you go to an event and typically it's barbecue, right?
Right.
And so, you know, nothing wrong with that, all that stuff, but I miss my good Italian food. It's, it's just not the same down here. So, but all good.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Evan, for connecting and spending so much time. Really enjoyed the valuable conversation that we had. I can't wait to come back and re-listen to the episode as I'm editing it and all that stuff, because there's so many nuggets in there that I want to go back and learn about. Really appreciate you spending time and look forward to continuing to be connected. If I can help you in any way, please reach out. You now have a connection that I hope I can help in any way. And I look forward to, you know, staying connected and possibly getting reconnected on an episode in the future.
Sounds great, Todd. Thank you. I've really enjoyed the time and I appreciate your questions. They provoked me into some remembering and thinking about some things in new ways. So I thank you for that.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening today. It's always great to share ideas and also get feedback from you. So please send me an email at managemepodcast@gmail.com. Visit my website, manageme.godaddysites.com. And both those areas, whether it's email or website, you can send me questions, you can refer me to sponsors, and I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to have you as a guest. I'd love to hear your thoughts around whether the guests we're having and the topics we're having are working for you, and would love to hear anything that you'd like to hear on the upcoming podcast. Thanks again for listening and appreciate it.